So it was on this day 40 years ago when 918 people, 287 of them children, killed themselves. If you don't remember the event, then you've forgotten all about Jim Jones and Jonestown, which, as my next guest tells, some people would hope you would forget. They hope you'd forget how they honored and praised Jim Jones, how they celebrated Jim Jones, how they empowered Jim Jones. What those people want you to forget, fortunately, is presented in the book Cult City, Jim Jones, Harvey Milk, and 10 Days That Shook San Francisco, written by my guest with us now, Daniel Flynn. Thanks for being here today, sir.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Dan Site, Flynn, F-L-Y-N, and FlynnFiles.com, and we have it linked over at our webpage as well. Just as a refresher, because 40 years is a lot of time, might be a lifetime for someone listening right now, too. Who was Jim Jones?
Jim Jones was in Indiana, ostensibly a clergyman, who, when he was asked years later, you know, why he joined the church, he said that the thought to him was, how can I demonstrate my Marxism? And he said the idea was to join the church. And so he used the trappings of religion to win people over to socialism. And that was sort of the alpha and omega of People's Temple. That was not the main attraction for a lot of the people coming in. That was Jim Jones's main attraction in the pulpit. The main attraction for the people in the pews was that there were a lot of old people there, and Jim Jones was a very good con man and had people believing that he was healing them of cancer and making cripples walk and even having the dead rise again. And so a lot of the people that came to People's Temple, they kind of sat through the politics, but they really came because they wanted to see his magic show.
However, once you're exposed to something frequently enough, you're going to keep coming because you don't absorb it in a way that absorbs you.
That's right. And I think for a lot of people in People's Temple that, it was that they were all in, that they had too much skin in the game to leave. And so if you're, you know, just to give you one example, if you're raised a Christian and at a certain point Jim Jones stomps on a Bible in front of you or throws the Bible on the ground and says the Bible's full of lies, denounces the God in heaven as the stupid sky God, if you will sit through that, there's not much you won't sit through. And so that's, Jim Jones worked on people like that. If someone was a vegetarian, he had forced them to eat chicken. If someone was, you know, married to a woman, he would force them to have sex with him. If someone was very weak, he'd force them to have a boxing match with someone who was very strong. He was out to humiliate people. And for the people that lived through those humiliations, ultimately what that produced were compliant people, docile people, people who would do what Jim Jones wanted them to do.
Well, they call that the Stockholm Syndrome in abusive relationships, where you want to please your captor so that you'll hope your captor will leave you alone, let you have another day of life.
Well, that's right. On the last day of life for people in People's Temple, you can listen on Jones made a tape of this, and you can listen on the death tape, people thanking him for allowing them to die for communism, for socialism, what he called revolutionary suicide, protesting the inhumane conditions of the world. So 40 years later, we look back on this event and think, what was the point there? But at the time, the people in People's Temple believed that they were dying for a higher purpose, that they were dying to protest capitalism and in praise of communism. And you can hear on the death tape people thanking Jim Jones for allowing them to do just that. That, to me, you know, as much as it's crazy for people, you know, 900 people just to sort of kill themselves en masse, the idea that some of them really convinced themselves that they were doing something, they were sacrificing for a higher purpose, that's pretty mind-blowing as well.
Indeed, it is. Darwin Daniel Flynn with his book, Cult City, Jim Jones, Harvey Milk, and 10 Days That Shook San Francisco, FlynnFiles.com, Daniel's website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. When you think about Jim standing on the pulpit, he sees people sitting there. That's like the barker at the carnival. Okay, I got you up to the podium. Now I'm going to get you in, pay you, so you'll pay your dollar and go see the fake freak show that I constructed inside. So that's how we got the 9-to-5 street people in. Jim didn't stop there. As I said in the introduction, he was getting praised by, think of anyone in southern central California, the San Francisco area. He was winning over some big-time power brokers.
He really was. I have a letter from Jane Fonda to Jim Jones saying that she wants to be an active and full participant in People's Temple. And this is after She attended People's Temple services. She said she wanted to do this because she wanted her kids to be involved in that kind of an environment. Jim Jones regarded her as a member, and I'm not sure he was wrong about that, to regard her as a member after reading her letter. Fonda was one of many of the rich and famous and powerful who said very nice things about Jim Jones, who legitimized him, who vouched for him. Jerry Brown, the governor of California, spoke at People's Temple. Harvey Milk, when things went south for Jim Jones, the openly gay San Francisco supervisor, he wrote Jimmy Carter a letter saying that Jim Jones was a man of the highest character, that the people accusing him of misdeeds, one of them, Jones had essentially kidnapped a six-year-old boy from San Francisco. Milk called his mother a blackmailer and his father a bold-faced liar. So in essence, he took the side of the kidnappers over the side of, the six-year-old boy. That boy dies in Jonestown. You had the mayor of San Francisco appointing Jones to the city's housing commission, and he becomes very quickly the chairman of the housing commission authority in San Francisco. Pretty scary. This guy's effectively the largest landlord in the city of San Francisco, and when you think about what he did to his tenants down in Guyana, that is pretty frightening. And I think that's one of the reasons, people hear that, they don't believe it. And it's one of the reasons so many people read the book, is because, the idea of Jim Jones as a position of civic responsibility, we think of this guy in terms of guys like Ted Bundy and John Wayne Gacy and Charles Manson. We don't think of him, as running a major city bureaucracy, but that was the case in San Francisco.
Basically, it was, too. Well, Jim Jones in the aftermath was, because you portray him and present him as he truly was, as a socialist atheist, how and why was he later presented as the quote-unquote wacko fascist Christian, which that doesn't even come into any realm of any part of the realm of truth about Jim Jones?
Yeah, I mean, in Jonestown, Jones did not allow anyone to celebrate Christmas. He did not have any sermons. To the extent that he mentioned God, it was to denigrate God or to claim that he himself was God. I spoke to two survivors of Jonestown, and both told me that Jones initially confiscated any Bibles coming into Jonestown, but then when they ran out of toilet paper, he distributed them, and he instructed them how to use them. And I'm not going to go into detail any further than that, but people actually did that. And so the idea that the New York Times would write after Jonestown that Jones, yeah, he was a social activist, but he was also a preacher of fundamentalist Christianity, there's no basis for that. It's just, I don't know why they did that, but that first draft of history stuck. The Associated Press joined in. They said that the people of People's Temple were religious zealots. Walter Cronkite called them fascists. The reality was that they were hardcore communists. The people who killed Leo Ryan, Congressman Leo Ryan, on the airstrip outside of Jonestown, they were called the Red Brigade. That they were Jones's security force. Jones sent three people away from Revolutionary Suicide with millions of dollars, and he wanted to will the money of People's Temple to the Soviet Union. On the death tape, he talks repeatedly, and other people talk repeatedly, about People's Temple being communist and not being Christian, and that they were dying for the glory of communism. In fact, the whole concept there was called revolutionary suicide, and Jim Jones got that from a Huey Newton book, Huey Newton being the leader of the Black Panthers. He wrote a rather idiotic book called Revolutionary Suicide. Jim Jones ran with that title. He ran with the concept, and he ends up killing, over 900 people in the jungle because he misunderstands this moronic concept that Huey Newton put forward in 1973. People don't like to talk about the roots of this suicide, going into the Black Panthers and people killing themselves for communism, but that's exactly what they did. And for anyone who disbelieves that, just listen to the death tape. You can listen to it on YouTube.
That's not insinuating one is going to lead to the other, but your book does give pause when we think about how all these media darlings attaining public office proclaiming socialism is the one and only way to go, it does give, like I said, pause to think of what we might be seeing happening.
Well, one of the reasons that Jim Jones went that direction for mass suicide in South America is that he set up this utopian socialist community in the jungle, and it didn't work. It was a complete failure. And I think if he were a normal person, he would blame himself. He would rethink his ideas. But he was not that. And so instead of trying something new other than socialism, he blamed the world. He said that they were committing revolutionary suicide, protesting the inhumane conditions of the world, as if the world were at fault because he couldn't feed his own people running a giant farm. So I think that it really put an exclamation point to a very chaotic time in San Francisco and to a very, it was a very, very chaotic time in the world. If you're looking at what's going on in Cambodia and elsewhere in the world at the time, Vietnam, communism really was on the march. And obviously in Jonestown, it kind of ran into a brick wall. In the United States, you had a very chaotic decade in San Francisco. You sort of had the hangover after the high. In the 60s, you had Haight-Ashbury and the Summer of Love and all that. And you get into the 1970s, and there's really a price to pay for that party. You had the Symonese Liberation Army. You had the New World Liberation Front putting bombs, everywhere on Dianne Feinstein's daughter's windowsill. The Zebra killings, the Zodiac killings. You had Sarah Jane Moore attempt to assassinate President Gerald Ford. And I think a lot of Americans got the idea that there was something in the water in San Francisco that made people crazy. And you got this idea through the Dirty Harry movie and Streets of San Francisco on the television. That all sort of comes to a head with People's Temple, with Jonestown in 1978, November 18th, 1978, and also with the Milk Moscone assassinations that happened 9 days later. That puts an exclamation point on a really wild and chaotic decade.
And in between, we also remember the loss of the lives of the innocent, especially Congressman Leo Ryan, who all he was looking for was the truth, and it brought him death.
That's right. Leo Ryan went down there to investigate the conditions down there, just as he had investigated. He had posed as a criminal to investigate the conditions in Folsom Prison. He had posed as a substitute teacher in the Watts neighborhood in Los Angeles to find out what the conditions were like in Watts. And he went down, not posing as anyone, but just went down to Jonestown to find out what was going on because he had heard some bad stories. He ended up rescuing about 15 people. And he lost his life in the process. One of the guys he rescued, Vern Gosney, I spoke to interview for Cult City, and he told Leo Ryan in Jonestown, look, this is not safe for you. You need to leave now. And he said, he told Gosney, don't worry. I have the protection of the congressional shields around me. And he thought that being a congressman, that made him immune from anything that Jones would do. And the reality was that, up until that point, there had been no congressman that had been assassinated. In the years since, there had been no congressman that had been assassinated. So he thought he was safe just because he was congressman and anyone around him was safe. He didn't know Jim Jones. He didn't know who he was dealing with. And some of the people, the defectors that were leaving with him, were warning him, look, you're not safe. I don't think Leo Ryan ever fully gauged how dangerous the situation was.
Nor probably did the NBC crew that was with him, too, thinking, too, that press, even in the middle of a Vietnam War war battle, would be safe, but not in Jonestown, unfortunately. The book is Cult City, Jim Jones, Harvey Milk, and 10 Days That Shook San Francisco. It is a factual telling of history that way too many people then, and maybe even now, prefer you did not know. But it's fortunate that Daniel has, after years of research and talking to people who actually survived. There were survivors off of that horror show as well. Learn more about Daniel Flynn at flynnfiles.com. That's FLYNN. Daniel Flynn, thanks so much for being here today.
Hey, appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.